I'm Christina Martin. You're listening to CIOE 97.5 FM, the home of East Coast music.
Welcome to the Nova Scotia Artist Spotlight, presented by the Nova Scotia Talent Trust on CIOE. I'm your host, Bree McKinnon, a songwriter, pianist, and former Talent Trust Award recipient. For this series, we're celebrating the 75th anniversary of the Talent Trust by interviewing some of the amazing, groundbreaking artists that we've supported here in Nova Scotia. You can listen on 97.5 or streaming worldwide online at www.communityradio.ca. On today's Artist Spotlight, we are featuring the writer and filmmaker Shandy Mitchell, who I'll be speaking with a little bit later on. But first up, we have Charlie Yang, an award-winning interdisciplinary artist working primarily with drawing, printmaking, sculpture, and public installation. She's been recognized in Blue Ann Artefino Top 30 Under 30 Artists, and her work has been shown around North America and the world. Some of her pieces are currently being featured in the First You Dream Traveling Art Exhibit, celebrating 75 years of the Talent Trust this month. All the way from Bedford, Nova Scotia, here today in Sackville, Charlie Yang, welcome.
Hi, thank you.
Thanks for coming in.
You're welcome.
So you're from Calgary, Alberta originally. What brought you and your art here to Halifax?
I moved to Halifax, I think, 11 years ago now, and I actually came to go to NASCAD for a semester, so I was planning on just being in Nova Scotia for a really short amount of time, but I ended up really falling in love with the artistic community in Nova Scotia and Halifax, and decided that I wanted to stay here a little bit longer. So I ended up staying over the summer, and then I ended up just kind of calling Halifax home. So I've been here a long time now, and I just recently bought a house here, so I guess I'll be here for a while to come.
Perfect. Yeah. We'll claim you as our own.
Yeah, I love it.
It does seem like Halifax and the Nova Scotia community in general really kind of supports its artists, and there is kind of a cool scene happening right now. Is that sort of what drew you here? You met some people you connected with?
Gosh, yeah, I think so. I mean, I was really, at the time, I was really inspired by all of the students that I was working with at NASCAD, and I was also just really inspired by the city of Halifax. I'm from suburban Calgary, which is pretty new, obviously. But I really loved the city of Halifax. And I think that really is something that has greatly influenced the work that I've come to make. I loved just walking the streets and seeing the textures of the city. And of course, I've started to become really inspired by some of the architecture of the city. So yeah, many things kind of led me to stay here. So
that's so cool. So can you tell me about the piece that is being featured in the Talent Trust First You Dream exhibit?
Sure, yeah. So there's actually two separate projects that are being exhibited at Mount St. Vincent Art Gallery. The first one is some frottage works that are called Swell, and they were created in 2014 when I did an artist residency up in Svalbard, Norway. And I was traveling aboard a barkentine ship with 27 other artists, and I was working directly from the land. Svalbard is a really incredible location. It's covered in glaciers, and so that project saw me creating rubbings from the surface of landed icebergs. Wow. So there are two what I like to think of as like portraits in that exhibition. I think we're all familiar with icebergs as like a very sculptural form, but often we don't kind of recognize or think about the texture that's embedded in the surface of the ice. And of course, it's a surface that is always changing. An iceberg is never the same twice because it's melting as I'm doing the rubbing. So I've got two portraits of melting glacier ice. And then the second project that is exhibited is sort of a follow-up project, actually, to Swell, and it's called Trace Erase. And for that project, I went to Prince William Sound, Alaska, and I sourced icebergs from the water, and I cast directly from the iceberg. So I was interested in that work, in actually capturing the form and the shape of the ice as it melted. So so I feel like those pieces are very complementary to each other in kind of thematic ways, but sort of offer what the other one doesn't have. So one of them is more about form, the other is more about sort of detail or I don't know, kind of inscribed lines, I think, in the surface of the ice. So
wow. Yeah. So what made you be drawn to the ice and that kind of changing landscape?
Yeah, I think it was just like a deep curiosity. I wanted to do the Arctic Circle program residency for many, many years, and I applied multiple times, and I finally got accepted, so I was really excited about that. And I was just really interested in materials that are never the same twice, or that are going through some sort of state change. And I think that's a theme that sort of runs throughout all of my work, but maybe most dramatically in the work that's being exhibited in this exhibition.
So cool. Yeah, that's amazing. So I wonder, like, do you speak about climate change or anything like that with these pieces, or is it kind of the underlying message that is relayed through the work?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a part of the work. I mean, I'm very, when I'm working site specifically, like I was for those two projects, I'm very aware of the fact that what I'm working on has been around, the surface that I'm working from, I should say, has been around for many, many, many centuries, but it's obviously decaying and going through transformation as I'm working on it. So I think it's very much embedded in the work, and probably one of the pieces sort of speaks to that a little bit more, where I'm actually referencing very small pieces of ice. So when we think of icebergs, we often think really large, but these are small little fragments, and some of the castings have actually been colored, so they're black, in reference to dead glaciers, which is when a glacier recedes up onto land and starts to collect debris and ash. So, yeah, I think there's definitely a very strong reference to climate change in there. Yeah.
I've spoken with a few different artists who kind of wrestle with that idea of, like, using your platform to bring light to topics that you think are important. Mm-hmm. And so I always think it's cool when I can kind of tap into what issues someone feels passionate about through their art, which I noticed with the iceberg piece. That's so cool. So the Nova Scotia Talent Trust exhibit is open now at Mount St. Vincent University until July 28th, so I can't wait to go check that out. So in 2012, you received the Charlotte Wilson Hammond Visual Arts Nova Scotia Awards, presented by the Nova Scotia Talent Trust. How did you hear about this award, or how did you hear about the Talent Trust? Do you remember?
I feel like I probably heard about it online somewhere. I was just starting to think about going to grad school at the time, so I was trying to source funding for that as much as I possibly could. So I probably reached out to just various people within the arts community that I felt like would maybe be able to point me in the right direction. But I feel very lucky to have had something like that to be able to apply to.
Mm-hmm. So that helped you attend grad school and continue your education in the arts?
It did, yeah. So I ended up going to a school in the U.S., and I actually found that there was very little funding to be a Canadian studying in the U.S. So it was really, I think, important for me to have something like the Nova Scotia Talent Trust awards to apply for, because it can be expensive. Grad school is very costly, and, of course, materials for art making is a whole other expense, too. So, yeah, I feel very lucky to have applied for that and been the recipient of those two awards.
For sure. Well, congratulations
again.
Thank you. So we're just going to have a quick listen to a song. So is there some particular music that inspires your work or that you listen to while you're working? And can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So the song that comes to mind the most for me right now is I've Got Your Fire by Jen Grant. There was a time in my life where I listened to that album on repeat in my car and in my studio for a very, very, very long time. And I was actually doing a residency at the Banff Center at the time. And so I think it was just, it's one of those songs that just kind of like takes you right back to that place and time. So yeah, I remember traveling through the Rocky Mountains from Banff to Canmore, just listening to that song as loud as I could in my car, grooving out, thinking about Nova Scotia. So
pretty. Let's rock out to some Jen Grant. This is I've Got Your Fire.
Beautiful lady, she had her baby, and she walked 10 miles through the snow with the wind blowing cold. She said, gotta get away for a while, through the summer till the end of October. Heaven knows how she tried. Oh, angel, she cried, Gabriel, can you keep me in line? Oh, hear him sing. I've got your fire, I've got your fire, I've got your fire, yeah. I've got your fire, I've got your fire, I've got your fire, yeah. Oh, Sadie, she had a man made. Said another pass. Running through the street, she was a wild beauty queen. Oh, angel, she cried, Gabriel, can you keep me in line? Oh, hear him sing. I've got your fire, I've got your fire, I've got your fire. I've got your fire, I've got your fire, I've got your fire.
This is Guy Paul Thibault on CIOE 97.5 Community Radio.
Welcome back. I'm here with Charlie Young, award-winning artist and former Nova Scotia Talent Trust Award recipient. So Charlie, I see you just got back from China. Can you tell me what project you're working on there?
Yeah, so I was very lucky to be a part of a cultural mission that went to Guangzhou, a really massive city in China. And we were installing an exhibition called Maud Lewis and the Nova Scotia Terroir. So I was traveling with five other artists and then Sarah Fillmore, who's the curator of the Art Gallery of Nova Scotia. And we were installing a group show of all of our work that was very much based in Nova Scotia. So things that we were all artistically really inspired by. So yeah, we were there for about a week installing the exhibition, which was an incredible experience. So
that's so interesting. And have you been to China before?
I haven't. This was my first trip to China. So it was a huge learning curve, but I loved every minute of it. I thought it was a really incredible place to be. And I feel really thrilled to have been a part of that trip and now return back to Nova Scotia. And I feel really motivated to jump back in the studio and keep making work. So
that's amazing. Well, yeah. I was just going to ask you, like, when you're between projects, where do you find inspiration for the next thing? And yeah, where do you search for that motivation, inspiration?
That's such a good question. I feel like I'm always searching. I'm always collecting things. I'm always photographing things on my phone and storing them in albums or using a sketchbook or just, I'm just always in this kind of collection mode where I see something interesting and I want to try to remember it later on. But I have a pretty active practice where I'm always kind of working on something, whether that be like a large scale project or smaller drawings, but there's always something that's kind of on the go for me in that regard. But I feel like traveling is probably another really big influence for me, is just seeing different sites and being inspired by different textures within a place and letting that kind of influence the work that I'm going to make down the road.
Definitely. Yeah. So is there one thing on the books right now that you have coming up in the next few months, or are you sort of...
You know what? I'm going back to Banff. So I'm from Calgary, as you mentioned. I think, you know, being distanced and being in Nova Scotia has really come to teach me how much I love the Rocky Mountains of Alberta. So I'm going back to do a project in Banff where I'm going to be working from the site of a prescribed burn. So that'll be very interesting. I'm excited about that project, but I'll be casting directly from the charred surfaces of a prescribed burn just outside of the town site of Banff. So yeah, that's probably coming up in July for me this year. So
wow, that'll be interesting, especially given all the wildfires they've had out there in the past few years, to kind of play with that idea of prescribed burn.
Yeah, I'm really curious about that project. I mean, I think like whenever you start a project, you don't really know exactly what it's going to entail, and you learn so much by making the work. So, you know, at this point, I've got this idea, and I'm really hungry to do it, but I'm looking forward to just learning about what the project is actually about for me and how it sort of materializes. I'm not really one of those artists that moves in a linear direction from, you know, the initial starting point to the end of the project. I'm really, influenced by the process of making. So yeah, it'll be really curious to see how the work transforms through that process.
Yeah, someone said to me once about artists, or you kind of have to be like a lifelong learner, unlike other professions where maybe you do your schooling and you get your experience and then you do your job. It's like your job is always changing, and yeah, that must be really an interesting feeling to constantly be learning and going with the flow like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're very right about that.
I know you also, speaking of learning, do a little bit of teaching at NASCAD, and you mentioned you went there. A lot of the people I speak with in the creative industries have had like a teacher or a mentor or someone who started them on this path and inspired them throughout. Is there somebody like that in your life, or have you had an influential person that inspired you to pursue this path?
Yeah. I mean, there's so many folks. Some of them are now colleagues, which is really incredible. I think one of the people that really sticks out the most to me is an artist actually based in Calgary now, Rita McCoe. She was faculty at NASCAD for a period of time, and I worked with her while I was at the Banff Center, and I just learned a lot about art making and a lot about teaching actually from Rita McCoe. So yeah, there's things that I do now that I try to be really active in the studio, and that's something that I learned from Rita. So not just sitting down at your chair or at your desk working, but like getting yourself up and out and moving around and taking risks and just being really, really present when you're in the studio or when you're creating works. So, yeah, probably her. She would probably be the biggest influence on me right now.
Cool. So, yeah. What advice, if you were to be that mentor to a younger artist, mm-hmm. Or to kind of look back to when you were applying for your Nova Scotia Talent Trust Award and young artists who might just be applying for their first scholarships from the Talent Trust, what advice would you give them as they embark on their career?
I think maybe there's two things. One, I would say just apply for as much as you possibly can, because of course you're not going to get all of the things that you apply for, mm-hmm. but that's no reason to not apply. Mm-hmm. So open yourself up to those possibilities for sure. And then I think the other thing is to just keep making work, like just keep producing work, because everything you make is not going to be great. There's going to be some failures along the way, but to just find the motivation to continue to make work, and eventually you'll be happier with the work that you're making. So,
mm-hmm. What do you think your motivation is to continue making art?
Gosh, I don't know. I just have a little fire in my belly sometimes. I don't know. I like, even right now as I'm sitting here, I've been out of the studio for a couple of weeks, and my hands are just itching to get back into making. So, I don't even know. I think it just kind of comes from deep within. Yeah.
Cool. That's so great to hear that you're just continually inspired to get back at it. So just to recap, the First You Dream art exhibit celebrating 75 years of the Nova Scotia Talent Trust is showing now until July 28th at Mount St. Vincent University Art Gallery, followed by it will travel to the CBU Art Gallery and the Art Gallery of Nova Scotia Western Branch in Yarmouth. So you can go there and check out some of Charlie's amazing pieces in addition to the other artists that are being featured. So Charlie, thank you for coming in, taking the time to chat today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Perfect. We're just going to listen to your last song pick, Arms Like Boulders by War on Drugs. Can you tell us a little bit about that song before part ways?
So I picked that song mostly because I sometimes put that song on repeat very late at night when I'm really trying to push through the end of a project and I've got a big deadline coming up. So
keeps you
energized. Good jam. Yeah.
Perfect. Okay. Thank you, Charlie. We're going to check out the song now.
Thank you.
So now that you realize that fate is so sweet. You're listening to CIOE FM 97.5.
Our next guest is Shandy Mitchell, a Canadian novelist and filmmaker. Her first novel, Under This Unbroken Sky, won a 2010 Commonwealth Writers Prize, among others, and her award-winning short films and feature film, The Disappeared, have played worldwide, garnered awards in cinematography, design, sound, performance, and direction. In 2008, she was awarded the Canada Council's Victor Martin Lynch Staunton Endowment in Media Arts. Shandy, welcome.
Hello. Hi, Bria. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us today. I wanted to say I just read your new book, The Waiting Hours, and it was absolutely beautifully written. I started it a few weeks ago because I thought, you know, I need to finish this before the interview, and then I think I read it in 2 days. So,
wonderful.
Congratulations. And
Thank you very much.
Can you tell me a little bit about how this book came into being?
It's always tough to answer what the inception is. It starts with a question, I think, for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was starting to feel this anxiety, this tension in the world. And I turned to my city, Halifax, to look at it. And I think at the question of me, I was wondering what the cost of the accumulation of loss and trauma was to people. And the characters I held were first responders in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Set in a city much like Halifax, and it's looking at their lives on and off the job. But at its core for me, I think it's about the courage of the everyday, you know, how we face the storms of life and how we hold on, how we fall, how we rise, how we keep going on.
That's beautiful. Do you have a personal experience with first responders, or is that something in your family? What made you want to focus on this profession?
No, I don't have any first responders in my background or my family. Though I think that, I think people that many of us have stood in the role of responder in a family. So I certainly had that experience. I certainly have had the experience of standing in crisis. And I wondered what that would be like to do that every day.
Yeah.
Get up in the morning and then somehow leave it behind when you come home to the quote unquote ordinary world.
Yeah.
And whether it was possible to leave it behind.
I just assumed that you would have a firsthand experience with this because the way you described it was really visceral and really it really gives you empathy for people in that role. It's a tough position to be in.
I did a great deal of research. I spent a year researching probably before I even began to write, when I was just trying to understand who would these characters could they be, and I had to understand something about their work first. So you know, I did police ride along and sat in on 911 calls, sat in at ERs and hospitals and just watched and listened and did interviews and until I had enough that I thought, okay, I have a framework, let me now slip into these lives and these heartbeats and just follow them.
Wow,
that's how I approached it.
I never thought about that, the research side of writing a novel. What was that experience like, really being in the thick of where it all happens?
You know, I was very privileged. I mean, it was both for the work and communities that opened doors and let me come in. You know, I start with I know nothing, and then I hope I learn enough that I can bring some kind of reality to my fictional world. You know, I was very, very humbled to watch the intensity of these jobs, and I thought it was kind of tough, you know, being a film director working in film. But boy, I sit through the real life, and you just feel that constant pressure and responsibility. It's intense work, and you know, I have great respect for those who do it.
Yeah, well, you do a great job of honoring the people in that profession with this new book, for sure.
Thank you.
It's interesting. You mentioned setting the book in Halifax or in a city like Halifax. And I noticed that it's almost like the city is like its own little character in the novel. You really get a sense of the history and the culture and kind of the complicated sides of this city. So what made you choose Halifax as the setting, or was it always just the story has to be told in Halifax?
It's always going to be Halifax that I was looking at. One of the beginning points of the story for me. I had borrowed a vehicle from a neighbor, and they had a police scanner in it. And it was this beautiful day. I was driving into the city, and I could hear all these emergencies happening around me, but I could see nothing. And one of the first questions, it really unsettled me that all these stories were unfolding and I was oblivious to them. And so the city started to call, and the city seemed to represent in a macrocosm of a larger question I had. It was a place I could go to walk the streets and sit in my communities and watch and observe. And I didn't name it, though, in the book, because it also, the stories of the novel, I think, are unfolding in other places. Mm. And I wanted to have that openness that wherever you were, you could step into this city and recognize something of your own.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm just realizing now that as you're going through it, only kind of an insider on the East Coast would know, oh, I think that is Halifax, but you never actually spell it out. So it's interesting that in one chapter, I notice the main character, one of the main characters, Tamara, goes to her home neighborhood and reminisces on some of Nova Scotia's musical heritage. And they mention Portia White, which I noticed is interesting because the Nova Scotia Talent Trust was founded 75 years ago to support the career of Portia White. So I'm just curious, how did you hear of Portia and why did you want to include that homage in the book?
Well, it seems I've heard of her for years. I don't know where I first heard of her story and probably through the Talent Trust. I think much more known now as she's being deservedly honored. But I was aware of the incredible musical legacies and talents that were present in our Black communities in Nova Scotia, and I just wanted to hold some of that in the book. It's as part of the narrative as any of the other stories that are told, and I just wanted to honor.
Yeah. Speaking of music, is there any particular music that inspired your process while you were writing this book?
There were a few. This was the first book that I actually selected music to listen to. Usually before I wrote, I'd play something over and over again to hear the rhythms of it, because I was trying to hold music in words, which is an interesting challenge for me. But one of the songs that I would listen to lift me up to remember where I was looking for the light in the novel was one by Elbow, and when I completed the manuscript, it was the one that I played the most often to get me to my own beautiful day, and it's a song called One Day Like This.
All right, well, let's have a listen to that song and then we'll be right back with Shandy Mitchell.
Drinking in the morning sun, you think I wink I did? Laugh politely at repeats. Yeah, kiss me when my lips are thin. 'Cause holy cow,
Bria McKinnon. This is the Nova Scotia Talent Trust Artist Spotlight, and I'm speaking with Shandy Mitchell. So Shandy, I noticed when I was reading your most recent book, the writing is very visual too. One of the characters is describing trauma throughout the book in terms of colors that sort of leave their mark in different places and different houses. Are you also like a visual artist by any chance? Because I thought that was really interesting.
Well, filmmaker, and I know my work has, my literary work has been described as cinematic, but people can see it, and that's I'm hoping intentional on my part, where I'm trying to bring the reader directly into the world. I want you to walk. Mm. I want you to step inside, and that involves using some film techniques to do that. But it's just also the way I create. I see the chapters, I see my characters when I create, and then I try to find a way to create the illusion in words.
Very cool. And I know that you receive scholarships from the Talent Trust in filmmaking. So is that sort of where you cut your teeth as an artist? You initially started filmmaking and film editing?
Well, it started probably in university for me, where I was studying English and theater, which is where I thought I was going to land. And then I kind of stumbled into film, European cinema, and I went, oh, this fuses all of my loves and interests, and that I want to understand how to make these moving images. And it was the Talent Trust that, oh, so many moons ago, gave me the first grants to attend, you know, workshops out of province to come to meet like-minded people. To there weren't film schools at the time, so I had to travel elsewhere, and to inspire me to learn the craft, to try to find out how do I bring the vision of what's in my head through the collaboration with others and the techniques. So it was really important. It was the Talent Trust gave me the first opportunities to explore, to play, and said, you know, we support you. Go try.
Wow.
And here I stand today.
Very cool. So at that time, where did you see yourself going in filmmaking? Were you just kind of exploring this world and getting your feet wet, seeing what was to come?
No, I was always very clear. I wanted to make films. I wanted to write and direct. It was always what my intention was. The industry was brand new at the time when I was beginning, and the first features were coming into town. And as I said, the Canadian Film Center, et cetera, didn't exist. And so I decided to become crew on these films, and chose a position where I knew I'd be standing alongside directors and DOPs and designers, and that would be my training school. And so I embarked on this kind of master class of filmmaking, but the intention was always to make films. And the fiction writing, though, started before all of that. It started as a child. I was always writing stories. And initially, I thought I was going to be a writer when I was young. That was my path. And then I attended university, and there were no creative writing programs. So I kind of left it behind, and the writing was being fulfilled in film. And it wasn't until my first novel that I actually said, I want to go back to the page for a while. I was so tired of waiting for permission to create films, because it takes a lot of money, it takes a lot of people, and on the page, no one can say no, I can do anything I want.
I guess that travels pretty well, too. You can kind of sit and write wherever or whenever you need to, unlike filming a movie.
Yes. And, you know, and so because I work in long form, it can take 4 or 5 years, it seems, my cycle to create these long pieces. And when I make a film, you finish a film and you're thinking, oh, it was fantastic, and best experience of your life. But by the end, you're around so many people and it's so intense. I retreat to the page and, now I want to write a novel, and I'm just solitary and it's just me and the page. And then you finish that, I'm so sick of being alone, I want to make another film.
That's probably a good complementary combination you have there, filmmaking and writing.
I'd like to pick up the process. Maybe I need to write shorter form so I can do more.
So what is your process like, Shandy, when you're in between projects or novels? Where do you get the ideas for your characters or for your stories?
You know, for me, I need to fill up. I need to fill up once a big project is finished. And that could mean just really stepping back towards life and coming out of it and saying, okay, where am I now? What's happening now? Start listening. Sometimes it's about waiting. Something's going to come towards me that's going to pique my interest, that I'm going to go, is this something I want to follow for 3 or 4 years? Why? What is this blazing question inside me? And travel would help, art, music. I want to fill up on everybody else's creations. I want to just gorge on life after the completion of a big project. And then at some point, something starts to worry at me. I don't know where it comes from, but there's something has happened, something I've seen, something I've heard, and that becomes the next piece.
So I know as a musician, it's always tricky when you just finish this album that you've poured your heart and soul in, and everyone says, okay, what's next? What's the next project? But are you in that regrowth phase at the moment? You have your book, brand new release. Are you just absorbing and waiting for the next inspiration to hit?
I am. I do have a couple of film scripts in process, and whether they're next or whether... But there's also another story very quietly starting to whisper. So, but right now I'd love to be able to have the luxury just to take a couple months and just restore myself now. It takes a lot of energy to create in any medium, as you know, with music, with painting, art, writing. It's a depletion, and it's time to just enjoy a couple months. And then I'll start again, because we always start again. Something calls us. Something catches our attention.
What do you think that something is?
Oh, boy. I wish I had that answer. There's a compulsion. It's just something for me. It just feels it's inside me. And when it speaks, it demands to be listened to. Like, I'll dream characters, and I'll go, why am I dreaming? Once I started to block in on a character and characters in the latest novel, I started to dream 911 calls, and I was on the receiving end. And I was like, why am I hearing 911 calls? And I dreamed it, and I dreamed it. And I thought, like, okay, who's calling me? I know it sounds a bit out there, but it does. It's kind of, becomes kind of an obsession, a compulsion. It sometimes feels like the story is picking you.
Mm. Wow, that's really beautiful. So if you could give advice to the young artists who are just now applying for their first Talent Trust scholarships and just embarking on their career in the arts, what important piece of advice would you give?
I'd say find your voice. You know, allow yourself to find your voice, especially in the arts. Don't chase, you know, whatever the latest trend is. Try to find what's calling you. What is it that you uniquely can speak? And be grateful for everyone that reaches out a hand along the way. The arts is, you know, it's a tough gig. So the only thing you have is your integrity, your voice. And your truth, and that can mean that you have to supplement and work other jobs, but you're serving the work, and those jobs allow you to get back to this frail art that I think this fragility that in this what can be a hard world to create art can be quite a courageous act, I think.
That is really incredible advice, and I struggle to keep that in my heart as well. So thank you so much for your time, Shandy. It was a real pleasure speaking with you.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. So we're going to listen to some more music before we finish up here. Here's a piece of music from Shandy's feature film, The Disappeared.
Here and now, while we are tired, here and now, with all our might, here and now, we vow to one and all, we shall not forget tonight, we shall not forget tonight. Not alone, here and now. our way back home. We shall find our way back home. Sometimes I don't believe in nothing.
Thank you so much for listening to the Artist Spotlight presented by the Nova Scotia Talent Trust. For more information, or if you're an artist who might want to apply to the Talent Trust, go to www.nstalenttrust.ns.ca or follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at NS Talent Trust. Special thanks to CIOE and our producer Ron James, as well as Musing Nova Scotia, and our theme music is The Great Karoo by Will Fisher.